Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Misha Tate, and you're listening to Carson's Corner.
This is Justin Ray, and you're listening to Carson's Corner. Make sure you stay tuned in.
This is Justin Ray Harvey, Frank Duke's student. You're listening to the best of the best shows on the web and beyond. Carson's Corner with Bob Carson.
This is Bo, the one-man army Taylor, media darling and Midwest champion of the world. You're listening to the only radio show that's hard-hitting, keeps it real, and does not pull punches. Carson's Corner.
This is the coach, Sean Tompkins, and you're listening to the best in mixed martial arts, Carson's Corner.
Okay, let's go. Yeah, g'day, this is Justin Lawrence calling from my backyard in Australia, mate. You're listening to Bob Carson, the finest investigative journalist in mixed martial arts history. Listen to his show, I love it.
Hey, this is Joey Odessa, and you're listening to me on the Bob Carson Show, the show that lets no words barred give a whole new perspective to no holds barred.
These days, it's not much fun at Bally's and Caesars in Atlantic City. The CEO is playing the corporate greed game, cutting dealers' hours, cutting retirement and health benefits, even breaking the law by refusing to bargain. Yet he paid himself $39 million last year, with plenty of perks.
Place your bet.
When Bally's and Caesars play games with casino dealers, it's not fun for anybody. And everybody loses. That's why the UAW Atlantic City Dealers Union paid for this time.
Another edition of Carson's Corner right here on Blog Talk Radio. My name is Bob Carson. Pleased to be with you this evening. We have a very, very special guest, Mr. Elvis Sinisek. Elvis the King Sinisek. He's been on the program before. He's a legend, obviously, in the world of mixed martial arts. One of the greatest Australian MMA fighters to ever grace the sport of mixed martial arts. And he's still been involved with the sport, and he's one of these guys that just is the nicest guy. He's just an all-around class act outside of the octagon, outside of competition, during competition. He really gives back, and he's a very, very a humble and intelligent person. We're very, very pleased to have him here on Carson's Corner. He wished me happy birthday the other day on Facebook, and I'm like, oh, I got to get him back. It's been a while since we talked to Elvis, all the way from Australia, and I think I kind of messed up the time because I initially scheduled the show for 9 p.m., and I thought that that would be 9 a.m. his time, but I think somewhere along the line I may have screwed up, so I pushed the show up to 7 p.m. here on the East Coast. We also have a thread going on the Underground Forum. If you want to chime in there, please let us know. We have a chat room box open, a chat room window open. So if you want to give me your questions, comments, or concerns for Elvis, you can 7-3-2-6-9-7-4-9. That is 347-326-9749. This is a crazy day, huh? You had Prince dying. Prince dead at the age of 57. For some reason, where I work, they always play like 80s songs, and we have like a loop of just continuous music. You go into stores, you hear, music, you hear certain songs from different genres and whatnot. Well, Prince, they always would play some Prince songs. I mean, Raspberry Beret and other hits that he had in the early 1980s, and God, I was thinking about this guy a lot, because you hear these songs, and he was just a very, very interesting person, interesting. He had a very interesting aura, and he really, really was a certainly a rock star, somebody that was destined to be where he was at, and he passed away. I found out about this, I think, today, listening to some radio show on Sirius XM 93. I think it was, I don't know, Fight Club or something like that, or MMA Junkie. I don't remember which one, but unfortunately, he passed away at the age of 57. And so you had David Bowie that passed away earlier this year. You've also had you have Prince passing away, and it's just crazy. It really is. Elvis is trying to give me a call via Skype, and we're gonna have to unfortunately, nobody can call in via Skype. They have to actually call the hotline or call the number 347-326-9749. 347-326-9749 is the call in line for anybody out there. I'm doing so many different things here, folks. I'm trying to communicate. All right, I just got a message here. I got to open up my messenger from Elvis here, and we're trying to get him on the program right now. We're trying to actually, just give me one second. Actually, we're going to take a brief time out. We're going to go play a song. We'll be right back on the other side of the song with Elvis Sinisek, hopefully here on Carson's Corner. So just stay right there.
Questions we have as we grow, it's hard to find answers to what we don't know, but sometimes there's someone to whom we can turn to teach us life lessons, help us to learn just what's important and what matters most, much more than our teacher, and we call them coach. Right there to guide us when we need a hand. They reach deep inside us and help us to stand. To lead by example in words and in deeds, and show us the courage we need to succeed. And I stand before you, I'm proud to boast, I'm one of the many who's learned from the coast. To never surrender your hopes or your dreams, and always remember you've got to believe. Wisdom, courage, and kindness is how you measure a soul. The road that you travel, the choices you make, the load that you carry, the chances you take. Our blessings and offer this toast to one who will always be known as the coach, to one who will always be known as the coach.
Okay, we're back here on Carson's Corner. We should be hearing momentarily from Elvis Sinisa, calling all the way from Australia, after 9 a.m. there on the other side of the world. We were just talking about Prince. We're talking about some unrelated MMA stuff or unrelated news items that took place. You also had the death of China, WWE China, who was part of DX. She was also, I think at one time, dating Sean Waltman, what's his name, X-Pac, and she passed away at the age of 46. Well, all these wrestlers are dying. This is, I mean, that's not surprising, but it's just, like, really unbelievable. We're just experiencing so many people dying, but, I'm responding now to a text. I got so many different things going on. So if you hear some non-fluencies or whatnot, just understand that that's what I got going on. But they said that China, according to some reports, China actually was inebriated. According to her neighbors, she was inebriated, and now, if Elvis is trying to call in now, and for some reason we're just having difficulty, he's not able to connect. Yeah, so when somebody calls into Blog Talk Radio, you get directed to hear the show. It automatically puts you in the queue, and so I really don't know what's going on. Yeah, 347-326-9749. Just give me 1 second. Actually, we're going to take another timeout here and try to reconnect here with Elvis while I play you a clip, play you a song here. Okay, we're going to play you a clip of George Carlin. This is more along the lines of a political skit or political segment, or part of his stand-up comedy, which he was absolutely known for, obviously really greatly respected. And hopefully we'll connect with Elvis on the other side of this break.
Now, there's one thing you might have noticed I don't complain about. Politicians. Everybody complains about politicians. Everybody says they suck. Well, where do people think these politicians come from? They don't fall out of the sky. They don't pass through a membrane from another reality. They come from American parents and American families, American homes, American schools, American churches, American businesses, and American universities, and they're elected by American citizens. This is the best we can do, folks. This is what we have to offer. It's what our system produces. Garbage in, garbage out. If you have selfish, ignorant citizens, you're going to get selfish, ignorant leaders. And term limits ain't going to do you any good. You're just going to wind up with a brand new bunch of selfish, ignorant Americans. So maybe it's not the politicians who suck. Maybe something else sucks around here, like the public. Yeah, the public sucks. There's a nice campaign slogan for somebody. The public sucks. Fuck hope. Fuck hope. Because if it's really just the fault of these politicians, then where are all the other bright people of conscience? Where are all the bright, honest, intelligent Americans ready to step in?
All right, we're back live here on Carson's Corner. This is Bob Carson. Elvis Sinisek on the line. We're able to connect with him. Elvis, are you there? Can you hear me?
Hey, Bob, how are you?
Good, good. Thanks for calling in. Really, really appreciate it. I know that we're having difficulty connecting, but it's great to get you back on the show and hear your voice. How are you doing today?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you. It's great to be on the show. Always enjoy chatting MMA and what's going on.
Absolutely, and I just want to take a moment here to observe the passing of a music icon, Prince Rogers Nelson. If you like music from the 1970s and 80s at any point in your life, you have to recognize and observe this music icon. What was your reaction when you heard about this, Elvis?
Look, honestly surprised. I only just found out this morning. So I guess it'll happen to all of us eventually. But he was a musical genius. He had some great stuff I used to listen to. So it's a very sad thing. I guess anyone passing is always sad.
Yeah. Yeah, and you and I are of that age where we grew up, in a sense, with the music of Prince in the background for many major events and happy memories. So we extend
Absolutely.
Our condolences to his family. How do you feel about 2016 so far? I mean, we lost David Bowie, and hopefully this trend abates and the year itself doesn't continue this way.
Yeah, look, I think it... there was a lot of things going on, people disappearing. It's going to happen. It's obviously we're in that era where people from our era are going to be disappearing. We're going to be noticing it. And I'm sure 10 years ago, the generation before us were thinking the same thing as their icons were disappearing. It's sad, but it's just a fact of life and time. It's going to happen. And as you said, hopefully not too many more.
Yeah, and on a brighter note, like I said, it's great to have you back on the show. It's been a few years since we last spoke to you. I wanted to give the fans an update on things you've got going on these days, and I also wanted to get your take on some current events in the world of MMA and the UFC specifically. But first, we got an email referencing a previous email or a previous interview you did with us where you and I spoke about the Underground Forum's infamous moderator and personality, Nick Machine May. When we spoke about Machine May in a hypothetical fight, I believe Dan the Wolfman said that you picked May to win if he had his snow shovel. That
snow
took me
shovel.
Off guard.
Yep.
Yeah. Can you remember the details of Nick May, the snow clearing samurai?
No, funnily enough, I haven't heard from Nick or of Nick in quite some time. So it'd be interesting to know what he's up to, or if he's shared his demise with Prince.
Yeah, well, it's like maybe we can have like a "Where Are They Now" segment for, you know, forum moderators and whatnot. You know, that'd be great for the people on the underground, because I'm sure there's people that genuinely are curious about the whereabouts of Nick Machine May.
Look, I think there's a few people from the underground past that people are curious about.
Yeah.
It's always interesting seeing those posts come up and to say, you know, you've been here a while and you know who KKM is and all that sort of stuff. So it's always interesting. It always comes up every couple of years, wondering where those infamous people are. And you know, now there are new infamous people out there on the underground.
Yeah, absolutely. I guess we've got to talk about the big Conor McGregor non-retirement debacle. Let's cover that as if it really is mainstream news. And I mean, it is mainstream news. I mean, you've got major outlets now covering this. First, before we get to that, what did you think of the fight between McGregor and Diaz and the way it went down?
Oh, look, obviously it was an exciting fight. You know, there was a lot of action. You know, Conor came out kind of how I expected. I thought he was pushing the action a little bit more than I thought he should have, and obviously in the second round really proved that when Diaz pretty much turned it around and showed awesome chin and then just great tenacity to push forward and put McGregor away. It was you know, a great showing by Nate there, and obviously, you know, McGregor wilted under the pressure, and it is what it is, and now we have the rematch, hopefully still on UFC 200.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there was obviously a moment where Nate hit him with a shot. I think it was I forget what round it was in, and seemed to have shaken him up both physically and psychologically, and it was really the perfect punch landed by
Nate. Yeah, I remember that.
And that's when the fight... Is that when the fight ended? Was it the second round where he choked him out?
I think it's where... Well, that kind of started the downhill run
okay.
for him.
Yeah,
he kind of landed that, and then he started swinging a little bit wildly. Nate started pouring the pressure on, and then obviously Conor shot to try and mix it up. Ended up getting reversed and ground and pounded, and... Yeah, we all saw what happened there at the end.
Yeah, absolutely. Now we have a possible rematch between Conor and Nate. The UFC, I believe, claimed that Conor demanded it, which now makes his subsequent behavior seems even more strange. Apparently, the matchup is now officially canceled. But did the UFC do the right thing here, Elvis? I mean, what do you think was going through Conor's mind? The way of getting out of this fight. It seemed all very, very strange.
Well, look, I don't think he wants out of the fight. I actually think that the loss has really affected him.
Right.
And I think a lot of what's happening now is a result of that. You know, he's always been big one. He's been very big about the promotional side. He understands you have to sell a fight. And that's why he makes the money, and he understands that's why he makes the money. So he's always working. He does his promotional work. He does, look, let's be honest, the lion's share of both fighters when promoting a fight. You know, he did it with Aldo. He did it with RDA. And then,
right.
Then Nate hopped on board. You know, Nate gave back well, but it was, you know, through Conor's plotting and everything that kind of got it going. So he knows what he needs to be done, and I think... After that loss, I think he thought to himself that he did too much and it took away from his ability to prepare and for this fight. And he released that statement this morning saying, you know, that's what it's about. He wants to prepare. He wants to take this seriously. Nate is a legit threat. He's bigger. He's got skills. He didn't prepare properly. He found there are issues that he wants to solve. So look, I do think, I think it's one, he's one of those guys that needs to sell, but also hates the thought of losing. He's, in his head, he's a winner, and mm-hmm. he cannot fathom the thought of losing again. And I think this outburst is because he wants to go in there on his own terms to ensure that that result doesn't happen again.
Yeah, that's a very, very interesting analysis, because I think a lot of people have said that too, that he doesn't want to give up, because I can understand the dissatisfaction with the UFC's promotional schedule. I mean, many athletes actually have complained about just how brutal it is, and the UFC itself listed it, yeah. it listed it as a reason for Ronda losing to Holly Holm almost immediately after she hit the canvas. So, you know, it really is, but I don't know. It could be.
It's a catch 22. It is. I mean, it's part of your job. You know, people realize it. Do understand, you know, we've signed to fight. That's our job. Our job's to fight. But part of our job is to get people interested in our fight. There's no point fighting if nobody's watching.
Right.
And that promotional side needs to be part of it, because if you want to get paid, you want people watching. But again, there has to still be that balance. And I think that's part of the difficulty. While Conor was winning, he felt the balance was in his favor, so he didn't have to change it. Now that he's lost, he wants to change that balance between the promotional and the... I mean, 'cause that's one of the things he said. He said, you know, Jose couldn't handle the promotional side of things. That's what broke him. So he is aware of how difficult it can be. It's obviously in his head, but at that time, it wasn't enough to affect him. Now it has. He wants to change it. And again, that creates problems, because he's set a precedent. This is what he does before he fights. This is how he sells. This is what people expect. And the people that expect that are also the UFC. So if they're expecting him to do it, and now he doesn't want to do it, he's now got to go against his precedent. And I think that's where the conflict happened. He wants to do one thing. The UFC expects something else.
Right.
So they've kind of gone up in arms. So they've tried. And again, I think it's just gone into that backwards and forwards. You know, no, I say you do this, and you, no, I do this, you do that, I do this, you. And I think it's kind of just escalated really quickly there. You know, the good thing is obviously Dana is always saying we're still on good terms.
Right.
He still turns up. The fight can still be on, but he's got to do his bit. And so Conor's gone, you know what, I will turn up, but after this, I want my space. I want to be able to prepare for this fight. And he made a good point with his one tweet. He's created more interest in UFC 200 than if he'd just gone on the promotional tour. I mean, before this fight, I wasn't as interested in it as I am now. I'm not saying I wasn't interested. I was looking forward to the rematch, but I thought it was
right.
a little bit, you know, not as relevant. I mean, there were better fights,
right.
I thought, for him. Frankie or Jose
right.
Would have been awesome, or even trying to get back on against RDA or something like that. I thought more relevant fights. And yes, this is a good rematch, but didn't get my comment. Now, seeing how he's reacting to it, how much it's affected him, I'm even more intrigued to see what happens in the match. Does he actually overcome those obstacles? Can he be better in this fight? Can he beat Nate, or will Nate win again? As I said, just that last 24 hours has created more interest than an entire media tour.
You know, you bring up so many great points there, Elvis. One thing I wanted to ask you is that I was listening to somebody earlier today, and they were suggesting that the UFC, because Conor has taken fights on short notice, and Conor has always been the promotional machine, that the UFC almost owes him a little bit of leeway, considering what happened with his teammate, you know, being involved in that fight where a Portuguese MMA fighter subsequently
yep.
died. And he's always done it, so you know, the UFC could compromise, and they could sort of split the promotional difference and have Conor do some things from Iceland and do all these, you know, it's not, you know, my way or the highway, so to speak. And that brings up questions about whether or not there are underlying issues here, whether or not, you know, there's some tension between Conor and the organization itself and whatnot. What do you think of all that?
Look, I mean, I do agree to a certain point. I mean, as I mentioned earlier, he's gone above and beyond in promoting all his fights. The flip side is he's being compensated for it. So you can't really say, you know, the UFC have been unreasonable, because I think for most people aware, he has the biggest paydays currently in the UFC. He's making a mint out of it, but he's also earning it. So you can't knock him for the money he's getting, because he's putting in the hours. And again, it just comes down to that point where he, you know, obviously this loss has affected him. He feels he needs to do something different. And as I said, in that one tweet, he's done more work than he would have if he'd just gone on a couple of interviews here and there. But yeah, look, I think the UFC is reasonable. I think they're aware of how much money he brings to the table. Conor is not the sort of person to walk away on a loss. I think he's a fighter at heart. He feels he's a winner and he needs to win this fight. And I think that's why he's kind of playing out on this, because it's affected him. And it will be interesting to see how much that affects him if the fight happens. So I would like to see the UFC compromise a little bit, give him a little bit of leeway. Hopefully both sides can come to some reasonable understanding and balance with the media requirements, and, you know, and then Conor can get his training requirements in. Because, again, last thing we want is him having excuses walking into this fight. We want Conor coming in at 100%. We want Nate coming in into 100%. Both guys coming in at their best and giving us the best fight and giving us a definitive result that, you know, says, okay, this is it.
Yeah, things sure have changed, or must have changed, since you fought Tito for the title, you know, with the promotional work and whatnot. I mean, now you've just got a lot more interest in the sport, and there's a lot more obligations and whatnot. And at the same time, these are fighters who get pay-per-view points, so they're directly rewarded for the promotion that they do in real terms.
The more people that watch, the more that you get paid. I mean, it was something I always understood when I was fighting, and I think that's why the UFC always brought me back and they used me a lot, is I understood the media was, it's a requirement. You know, as you said, regardless of what perspective you take it on or how you promote it, you want people to be interested in your fights. You know, want people to come along and want to watch your fights. You know, I always sought out media to do, whether it was radio interviews, online interviews, magazines, newspapers. Obviously, it was back in the day, it was pretty much just only MMA press who were interested back when I was fighting.
Right.
None of the mainstream press, particularly here in Australia, had any interest in it. And the majority of the mainstream press when I was in the US or London or Manchester were more interested in, you know, the sound bites of a brutal sport, making us, you know, trying to portray the blood sport side of it. So obviously that's changed. There's a lot more positive press now, the mainstream press here in Australia. You know, we've got the UFC appearing on the news and current affairs shows and in the main papers. And, you know, the average person now knows, you know, who Ronda Rousey is, and Conor McGregor is starting to become a household name outside of the hardcore fans. So, yeah, it definitely has changed, and I'm sure obligations have increased, but again, I do still believe it's part of your requirement if you want to make good money. I mean, if you're just happy to fight and make a small paycheck, then you don't need to do the PR stuff. But if you really want to succeed and make a lot of money, and that's what Conor does, then you got to put in the work, and that means getting people interested in it, talking about what you're doing, talking about your opponent, promoting yourself and the show.
Yeah, absolutely. And to the point I was making earlier, it really seems that McGregor has been acting erratically throughout this series of events. I mean, some people pointed out that he was cage side for the tragic Carvalho loss, which I wanted to touch on briefly. That's definitely something that could influence the fighter mentally, and even prior to I believe his coming on board with the UFC, he even hinted at retirement beforehand. And so this is really not anything new. Do you have any thoughts on that, how that could affect the fighter mentally?
Look, I mean, Look, no one enjoys that side of it. Like, the majority of fighters go out there, we go out there to win, not to injure our opponent. Injuries happen as a result of it, but that happens in any combat sport or even non-combat sport. Any contact sport, injury is just a side of it.
Right.
Obviously, you get your knockouts and your submissions and stuff, but seeing someone die that you have a direct connection to, I think, you know, it hits home and it makes it real, makes you realize that, you know, you do have to look after yourself. You do have family that you've got to think about. You do have a future. So, you know, and I think, you know, Conor always was, he said it from the start, you know, he was going to get in, get rich, and get out.
Right.
You know, that was, you know, always his goal. But obviously part of that getting rich was becoming champion, you know, and making himself, you know, someone that people will talk about for the ages. So, you know, he has that fighter's mentality. He wants to win. He wants the belt. But he also is quite smart in the fact that he knows he's got a limited window to make his money, to make as big an impact as possible. And when he's done what he feels he needs to do, he will get out. I don't think he's going to be one of those guys that, you know, retires, unretires, excluding what just happened yesterday, obviously. You know,
right.
At an older age, you know, there are some guys who fight because it's just what they have in the blood, you know, like the Nogueiras, they're the sort of, they just kept going and going, and even though, you know, a lot of their fans felt they should have stopped earlier, you know, a lot of people think Shogun should probably stop. You know, Henderson's the
right.
same. He just does not want to stop fighting. There are some guys, they just want to fight. I think McGregor wants to fight, but his priority is to fight, make a statement, get rich, and then he can sit back and then do other things. Obviously, he, you know, he's already, you know, hinted at McGregor Promotions, and obviously that's where he wants to go once he stops fighting. So he's already got other avenues he wants to work on. And I think with a lot of other fighters, they don't always have those avenues in the back of their head. And again, I'm lucky for myself. I always enjoyed fighting.
Right.
I always knew there'd be a time when I wouldn't be fighting and I'd want to stay involved with the sport. And, you know, on one side, I'm always involved in coaching. I've got great fighters here in Australia. I've got a great gym and team I work with. I was lucky because I've been so involved in the sport at so many levels, as a coach, as a fighter, as a referee, as a judge. I have a great insight into the sport, and I was able to get on board with Fox Sports and the UFC Fight Week show here in Australia, which for you guys over there is the equivalent of UFC Tonight.
Right.
So I get to talk about, you know, UFC every week, the up-and-coming Aussie fighters. So I have other avenues, and Conor is one of those guys. He has that in his mind. He knows that he wants to go elsewhere, so when he's ready to go, he'll go. Whereas I think there are some fighters, they don't have that. They don't know what they're going to do when they stop fighting. So every time they stop, they end up just coming back and fighting again.
What about your own career? Were there any moments either when you were fighting, spectating, or training where the sport seemed especially brutal or dangerous?
No. I mean, for me, it was always a challenge of skill. You know, when I first started, there were headbutts. It was, you know, the ballet judo days. I fought
right.
with no gloves and headbutts, and it was all about skill. You know, based on my walkaround weight, I probably should have been fighting in middleweight, based on the way, you know, the way guys fight nowadays. And I was fighting heavyweights and almost super heavyweights because it was just back in the day where it was about the martial art, it was about the challenge, the skill, my skill against your skill, you know, and trying to overcome the size obstacles. I never really thought it was brutal because, for me, it was always about a sport and a challenge. Obviously, others, you know, may feel otherwise. And I think today it's become even more of a sport. You know, I've watched the sport come on board with regulations, the unified
right.
rules, teams developing, the style versus style disappearing, everyone coming on board, cross-training with grappling, wrestling, striking, watching the different skills come into play. You know, first it was grappling, and then it became striking as you could defend the takedown. Then it became working off the cage, and then, using the cage to pin your opponent down, then using the cage to get back up. So I've seen the constant evolution of the sport, and that evolution has really shown that it really isn't as brutal as a lot of people perceive, because there's just so much to the skill. You can see so much to the evolution,
right,
the evolution of the fighters and their abilities, what they have to do to win. It's just another combat sport, another contact sport out there. But in my opinion, it's the most exciting, you know, contact or combat sport there is out there, just because of so many different things that can happen in the match.
Yeah, you brought up some really good points there. I mean, we're very fortunate that when two people fight, usually one is decisively the winner before a very serious injury or death occurs, at least in the short term. But the risk of injury or death is very real, ever present, and doesn't end once the fight ends or once the final bell has sounded. And it seems as if the promotion did the right things and Carvalho received appropriate treatment. It wasn't one of these fights where you saw it and you said, wow, that guy's going to wind up passing away. But I wonder why the UFC has avoided having any fighters die during or directly following a contest. I mean, is it just that the level of fighters is higher there? I mean, we've seen some pretty bad UFC fights. Do they just have better medicals? I mean, you know, I really don't know why we don't see that.
Look, I do think it's a combination of things, and I'll be honest, a little bit probably has to do with luck. But I think a lot of it is, again, the preparation, the amount of medicals you have to do to fight, like a very extensive, whereas compared to some of the smaller promotions, it's generally just a physical and a blood test. Whereas when I was in the UFC, it was MRIs, ECGs, eye tests, fitness tests, blood tests, those very extensive requirements. When you become over 35, they become even more expensive because obviously at an older age, you're a greater risk. As you mentioned, it's a higher level of athlete. So, you know, obviously the guys are a lot more conditioned, they're a lot more prepared. Their coaches are probably on top of them a lot more than some of the teams with amateur fighters. They've only got a couple of fights. Maybe they've only been training for a year or two. So you don't have as an extensive history on the person. It's just one of those things. The reality is it probably will happen one day, and it'll have nothing to do with the fact that the sport is brutal. It's just the reality of life. You see people, dropping dead in, football, motor racing, equestrian. The reality is people will die, and sometimes it'll be a result of the sport. Sometimes it'll have nothing to do with the sport. It'll be a pre-existing injury or condition that wasn't caught. I just think the UFC have done well because they do everything right. The athletes are at a higher level. Most of them have gone through that battlefield, through the smaller promotions. They've come through the other end. And they've moved up to the higher level. So, the chances are obviously going to be a lot smaller because the risk is getting smaller. The risk will always be there, but it's a smaller risk. Whereas in the smaller promotion, some places don't have as much regulation. The testing is not as extensive. And it becomes difficult because, obviously, particularly with amateurs, they don't get paid. So asking them to spend thousands of dollars to get medicals done is very difficult, and the small promotions generally can't afford to pay it for all their fighters. It's just a risk. I've seen, juniors die in football matches. It happens. It's not something we want to talk about, but the reality is it's there. It's a risk. It's a contact sport. It is what it is.
Now, let's pivot away from the tragedy talk and talk about something positive. I wanted to discuss your work as a host of the UFC Fight Week program on Fox Sports in Australia. I think many fans are waiting for you to be given some sort of on-camera role with the UFC. I mean, it seemed like a logical step. You appeared on commentary all the way back to, I believe, UFC 33 and got a good review and good response from the fan. How did this all come about?
Look, to be honest, I've actually been talking to a lot of TV stations over the last, 5 to 10 years about, a UFC program. The main stations here, Channel 10, I'd chatted to Fox before, the ABC network. I even had a contract from a private company which wanted to put a show together, I think back in 2010 or 11, 2010. But the reality is it was very difficult back then because there wasn't a lot of content. One of the difficulties also is UFC is probably the biggest part of it. And
right.
You need to have access to UFC content. If you can't get UFC content, it's going to be very difficult to put on a good show. Obviously, now with Fox having their relationship with the UFC, they're able to get UFC content. So their natural progression, obviously, here in Australia, to promote the Australian UFC, the Australian fighters, as well as the international brand, it's a logical choice to kind of make a show like this. But obviously, they wanted to get a current fighter, so that's how somebody got Richie Vass on board, and he already had a relationship with Fox. He had another show he was running with them, so that was an easy choice for them. But I think they also then wanted someone who could commit a little bit more, because obviously with Richie, he did have fights and occasionally would have to disappear on training camps and things like that. So that created an interesting piece on it because they could follow in and do a little bit that way. But with myself, because I'm no longer fighting, I had the experience. They were looking for someone, again, who had the connection to the UFC, had the understanding from all the different angles to be able to talk about it, thankfully could talk about it. From there, it was, they contacted me. And initially, it was just touching base and, it started off just as a, hey, maybe we'll use you occasionally. When I sat down to the producer, he was impressed with my depth of knowledge and my ability to speak, and they got me in. After that, he said, oh, maybe we'll use you more often. Then they got me into the studio. We did a test show. And after that, they're like, we'd love to have you every week. And I'm like, it was a natural progression for me. I always knew I would be doing something like this. I wanted to do commentary.
Right.
But the biggest difficulty or hurdle in that regard was I have a great team. I've got a lot of great fighters on our team who are constantly fighting, so it just became impossible to actually commentate because I would be cornering my guys who were on the shows. So, so the show, when they approached me, it was just like it was a given that, I would do this and I would commit time to it, because it would give me an opportunity to stay involved, with MMA and the UFC outside of the gym. And it gave me an opportunity, again, to talk about the sport and also, to promote my fighters. Like, the other week, one of my fighters, Nobby, fought on Brace, which is also on Fight Pass. So we got to promote it on the show. I got to talk about him, And I told people, watch the fight. He's going to put on an amazing fight. And it was probably the fight of the night. So I think he saved my butt on that one by putting on such a great show because, I recommended it and that. It's a great avenue for me to be able to stay with the sport, promote what I'm doing, support my fighters and team, and just help the sport overall grow. So, very lucky to be there. And I always believed it was going to be a natural progression for me.
Can you tell the people at home what your job as part of Fight Week on Fox involves?
Well, it's pretty much I'm there to review fights, talk about fights, also what's happening, inside and outside the UFC. Obviously, what happened with Jon Jones, what's happening with Conor, Ronda, that side of stuff, the general interest. Because one of the things, you have to get people interested in fights, and the best way to get interested in fights is get them to know the person. So, we do interviews where we talk to fighters. We do Skype interviews, SimSats, So with the international fighters, we get the Australian fighters in. We introduce the fans to the Aussie fighters. You know, hey, this is, you know, we've got some great Aussie fighters, you know, here. You've got Cole Moak with a fight coming up. You've got so many great fighters, with, you know, happening here in Australia. You want to sell them. Then the other side, I also have a segment called MMA 101, where I break down the techniques that used to try and educate the people, you know, how to do arm bars, how to do chokes, round kicks and push kicks, so people can see the different elements of the sport. And as we become more educated, they will enjoy it more when they understand what's going on. And then obviously breaking down the fight in the lead-up, you know, we try and break down how the fights are going to go. And then once the fights have happened, we break down what happened in the fight, how was, you know, it won, how was it lost, things they can do. And then we have a look at, you know, where they can go from there. So, like, you know, obviously we've got Robert Whittaker, an Aussie MMA fighter, fighting this weekend on 197. So, you know, we interviewed him a couple of weeks ago, got him on the show. We talked about his preparation, his personal life. He recently had a child. And again, that gets people interested. And then after that, we broke down his fight and opponent. He'll be fighting this weekend. And then afterwards, we know when we get back, we'll break down his fight, have a look at what happened. You know, obviously he's going to win, being the Aussie favorite there. So we'll break down his victory. I'm going to be positive here. And what happened in the show. So we try and cover all the different elements. Obviously, it's always UFC related. But then this, the entire breakdown of the different elements, the individuals, the fighters, the fights, the show, inside and outside the octagon, hopefully will give people a greater appreciation of the sport, get them more vested in it, get more people watching it. And again, and from that perspective as well, you know, it means it keeps me in a job. I'm being honest here.
Are you employed by Fox? You work for Fox. Okay.
Yeah, I work for Fox. Yeah, I'm a Fox Sports employee in that regard. I contract to them. Even though Fox worked directly with the UFC, and I still work at the UFC. So this weekend we've got UFC 197. The Star, which is a casino here in Sydney, is doing a viewing of 197. So I'll be a special guest down at the Star. So I'll come down. I'll show the fights. I'll help break down the fights during the show. And, you know, UFC asked me to go down and do that. So I still work with them. But, yeah, I am actually a Fox employee. Fox Sports Australia employee.
Yeah, that's what I figured. I mean, how does it feel to be part of a company like that? I mean, at least in some ways, has it changed your feelings on the workings of the sport at all, or changed the way you feel you can express them?
No, look, I'm pretty lucky. Being with Fox, I'm not as restricted as if I were probably a UFC employee, so I can talk about stuff. But I'll be honest, it is very colored by my experience. You know, I was with the UFC for quite a long time, and I saw a lot of the inner workings. And, you know, I understand it's a business. And again, now being part of the Fox crew, I can appreciate even more the business side of it, the production that goes behind it. That was probably the hardest thing when I came across, was starting to understand the production side of and what's involved in, you know, getting the product out. And because I dealt with UFC, and I've, you know, dealt with Dana directly and that, I see a lot of what's going on the outside, and I know people miss what's going on the inside. You know, I know Joe Silver. I know how hard his job is. I've spoken to him many times because, obviously, as a fighter, but I also kind of met him before. So we'd already had a bit of a friendship, and we'd talked about, you know, how difficult it is. I don't think a lot of people realize how much goes into matchmaking. Everyone goes, oh, well, this is easy. I just match so-and-so and so-and-so. But the reality is, you know, fighters have their own goals and plans. So sometimes matchups that the promotion want doesn't fall in line with them. They've got managers they've got to deal with. Sometimes managers won't agree with matchups, even though the fighter wants it. The manager goes, no, this is not best for your career progression. and then you have injuries and personal issues. So, you know, there's a lot that goes in the background which the fans don't see. And you know, part of my job is to help them see that on the show. As I said, you know, people do knock the UFC and say, you know, they're cheap, they're taking money out of fighters' pockets. And, you know, sometimes I feel they could do things better, but I also know how generous they can be. Like when I was fighting, you know, a couple of times I had tax taken out of my fees when I came back to Australia. It was quite substantial. And Dana would send me a check again to, hey, you know, great job here. This will cover what you lost.
Right.
You know, they do little things like that. I've seen Dana, you know, with sick people send out checks to help people in need. So, you know, to say that, you know, obviously they're doing it to make money. There's no doubt about it. That's what they want. If they're successful, though, the more successful they are, the more successful the fighters are. And I think, you know, Connor is one of the people that realizes and understands that. He understands his success is built upon their success. And I think a lot of the things they do, the UFC is doing, is trying to increase their success. And in the short term, it is, you know, it probably is affecting the financial side of some of the fighters, but the goal is to increase the overall success of the organization, which will increase the overall success of the fighters as well behind it. So, you know, hopefully this little piece here will help people see that there is a lot more going on in the background than sometimes you may realize. And hopefully, I mean, this kind of situation alone has probably made people realize that as well.
I wanted to talk about someone you fought, Jeremy Horn, who I consider one of the most underrated fighters of the modern era. There was a very revealing interview with Jens Pulver talking about Miletic fighting systems, and he claimed in no uncertain terms that Pat Miletic wasn't teaching the team a special fighting style or winning formula, and that Horn was the person who did the most in terms of expanding the games of people there during the golden years. So at one point, Jeremy Horn was a championship-level fighter, arguably the main technical coach of...
Spook, are you still there? Yes, hello. I've got a dead air. Might have to call back. Can you hear me? All right. I'll give you a couple more moments. If I don't get you back, call again. Hi, this is Stuart Acuff with Utility Workers Union of America, asking you to tune in every time you can to Bob Carson's Carson's Corner, one of the best pro-labor shows in America. We love it at Utility Workers. We love it across the AFL-CIO, and we're grateful to Bob for coming on and holding up our issues and holding up our principles and values.
Hello. Okay, then we're back live here on Carson's Corner. I apologize. We had a bit of an internet malfunction. Elvis, I apologize for the layover. Before we cut
That's
out,
okay.
I asked you about Jeremy Horn.
Technical coach, yeah, the behind the Miletic fighting systems. You're talking about the Jens Pulver interview recently.
Yeah. Did you catch that?
No, I haven't. That would be interesting to read. I've always had a lot of respect for Jeremy. I think I realized back in the day just how legitimate a fighter he was. I think he's one of those guys because he fights so much and he gets around so many places and he's He gets overlooked a little bit, but, you know, I mean, he put, you know, Chuck Liddell to sleep. You know, he's fought some greats like Anderson Silva and Antonio Nogueira, you know, back in the day before, you know, people realized just what a legit beast these guys were. And, you know, he was able to go to the distance with them, didn't always win. I think in the Anderson fight, he had an injury as well during the fight. He's just such a talented individual, you know, and I consider it an absolute honor to have, you know, have fought him and to have a victory over him, you know. Yeah, I think he's one of the most underrated submission fighters out there. And, you know, his overall game, you know, he had it all, striking, wrestling, grappling, and I could see how he would be, you know, the technical coach behind Milicic's success and all that. But, you know, saying that as well, you've also got to understand sometimes a coach's role isn't just technical. You know, there is a lot more to it. So, obviously, you know, Pat would have been involved a lot more. You know, that's the thing about Greg Jackson. He's not necessarily the technical success behind all the fighters he has in his camp, but his ability to put down great game plans, get them mentally prepared, you know, ensure the best matchups for them. You know, so there is a lot that goes behind being a coach. So you don't want to take away, you know, from Pat Milicic and his success. You know, obviously he put together a great team. And during that time, you know, they were considered probably one of, if not the best teams out there. So obviously he had a lot to do with it. The flip side is obviously Jeremy did as well. You know, his technical ability and his ability to drive the level up of the team obviously helped with that success as well. So, you know, I think that sort of success can be shared between those guys.
I want to kind of wrap up here on this area, Elvis. You, I think, are a significant influence over MMA and Brazilian are really the grandfather stage of MMA and BJJ down under. Anthony recently retired.
Yes. Are you still there?
I wanted to. Yeah, I can hear you fine.
Sorry, it just cut out for a second. You just said Anthony retired.
Yeah, is that correct?
So yes, that's correct. Anthony recently retired, so now he's just going to focus on, you know, the coaching and training side, which you know, he's going to be great for the team. Obviously, him fighting was good for the team. You know, it's always good to have such a high-level athlete on the team because, you know, gives the team something to look up to and strive towards. But then, you know, now having him back that he can help concentrate will also, you know, help take some of the workload off my shoulders. And give me an opportunity, you know, to spread it a little bit so we can really raise the level of all our students and our team with, you know, both of us on board.
That's awesome. And you guys, what is the status of your academy, your teaching down under? What exactly, you're still offering classes, you're still training, and you're still doing everything
That's
you
correct.
Were when we last talked to you?
Yeah, well, look, we have two gyms. The gym is called Cinesic Perosh Martial Arts. It's known as SPMA, which is abbreviated. We have a gym in Concord and in Moorbank. So, we cover all avenues. We've got kids' jiu-jitsu, adults' jiu-jitsu, Muay Thai classes, MMA classes. You know, we've got, jiu-jitsu competitors. We have MMA competitors. We do occasionally get Muay Thai competitors, but most of them end up branching into MMA. You know, it's pretty much the way most combat athletes are going nowadays. You know, we've got a fantastic team of fighters, guys like Steve Nicholas, Andrew Mills, who's undefeated at the moment. I'm trying to get him into the UFC. You know, one of Australia's top welterweights. Nobby, also undefeated, just fought the other weekend. Byron. So, and that, you know, there's also, you know, Brace MMA, which is here.
Right.
They've got a tournament. So three of our guys, Byron, Nobby, and Andrew are all in the tournament. So they're now into the semifinals. So they'll be fighting towards the Brace tournament belt, which is also shown on Fight Pass. You know, we've got great jiu-jitsu competitors. We have great affiliate schools. Not only do I teach at our gyms. So myself and Anthony alternate between Concord and Moorbank. I also go to affiliates. I've got, you know, affiliates in Sydney, up in Penrith. I have them up the Central Coast, up in Newcastle. You can find out all this sort of information. Go to our website, www.spma.net.au. You can find out about the gyms, affiliates, what's in your area. If there are any, you know, clubs looking for affiliation, you know, they can contact us through our website as well. Because, you know, obviously love teaching, want to spread the word about jiu-jitsu and MMA and, you know, just raise the overall level. But, yeah, the gyms are doing great. Hopefully you'll, you know, see more people in it. It's, you know, a big part of what I do.
Let's give your social media information out so people will know where to check out all what you got going on here. Tell people where they can keep up with what you've got going on.
Well, I have Facebook. Obviously, everyone has Facebook. I have a private account, a personal one, which is full. It kind of hit the limit many years ago. It was already over the limit when Facebook set the 5,000 friend limit. So now I do most of my UFC stuff and talking about fights on my fan page. So I've got Elvis. So if you stick my name in, Elvis Sinisic, you'll find my fan page. You can follow me there. I talk about upcoming fights. We talk about what's happening in the UFC, that sort of stuff. Obviously, I have an Instagram page, which the username is Rock and Rumble, and my Twitter, which is Elvis Sinisic as well. So you've got all the different options. You can keep up with what I'm doing. For anyone who's interested, I also do photography on the side, and I actually have a photography Insta page and a photography Facebook page as well, showing some of my work. It's one of the things I like to, you know, stay. I like to stay balanced, keep the physical, mental, and creative as aligned as possible.
Well, listen, Elvis, thanks again for joining me on Carson's Corner. Please come back on again in the future to give us your perspective on the state of MMA and everything that you're involved with. Elvis Sinisic, ladies and gentlemen, the king of Rock and Rumble. We really appreciate your expertise here on Carson's Corner.
It's been an absolute pleasure, Carson. Bob, thanks for having me back on. I always enjoy, I love talking about MMA. It's almost impossible to shut me up sometimes. you've got my contact details, so don't lose them.
Yes, ma'am.
And yeah, give me a call back, and we'll definitely get back on as the, you know, there's going to be a lot to talk about over the next couple of months, let alone the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right. Never any shortage of MMA news out there. So, Elvis, again, thanks a lot. Take care and enjoy the rest of your day.
Thank you. You too.
All right, that was Elvis Sinisic here on Carson's Corner. Big thanks to him for calling in. We really appreciate it. And I'm glad that everybody was able to hear this. Hopefully it came out okay. I'm hoping that we didn't have too many technical difficulties. But I think overall the interview went very well, very well, and I really appreciate his knowledge on the sport and his insight, because, you know, there's so many of these fighters that are doing commentary, and I'll be honest with you, some of these fighters shouldn't be doing it, okay? There's been an oversaturation in the market with fighters that retire early and looking for a paycheck, and it's convenient for the companies to hire them who have some sort of name recognition as opposed to other people. And so it's really, I don't think it's a good time for the MMA media at all. But I will say that Elvis Sinisic is one of the outliers out there, and guys that genuinely have insight and knowledge into the sport and are intelligent people and can speak very, very knowledgeably and are not just there simply for a name recognition factor, okay? That's not what he is there for. And, you know, he does have a very, very good voice, and it all seems to be, as he said, a natural progression for him, and that's great. That really is good. So very, very friendly, very, very easy to set up here on Carson's Corner, and, you know, we're going to have to see what happens with this whole Conor McGregor situation. I will say this, though. I think that it's a money fight, and I don't think that Conor McGregor is the best in the division. And the fact that he's able to generate so much press, the fact that he's able to generate so much publicity, not being the best in the world, not being the best fighter, really speaks volumes about the UFC hype machine. And I think a lot of the MMA podcasters out there and so-called MMA media, they're complicit in this and building this guy up and just, you know, having a lot of hype surrounding this guy, and to the point where, you know, he can lose decisively to Nate Diaz, the real champion of the division and the best fighter. Rafael Dos Anjos actually did an interview yesterday, and he was speaking about his fight, his upcoming fight versus Eddie Alvarez. Did that get any publicity? Does anybody care about his skill? No, it's this is part of a larger culture here, a bluster culture of who can shout the most, who can insult the most. We're seeing this on the political scene as well, and this has really been the case. This just didn't happen. This has been going on for 10 years now, where the corporate media, which one host describes as infotainment, gives these media bits to people, not for substance, not for anything they can learn, but who's going to generate the most ratings. That's why you look at on the political scene, where you got someone like Donald Trump, who by some estimates has gotten, you know, billions of dollars worth of media coverage, despite his rhetoric, despite, you know, how he conducts himself, you know, regardless of your political stripe. You have to acknowledge that it's a ratings game, and you had an especially candid CEO that spoke about how this is may not be good for the country, but it's great for, you know, their business. It's great for their company stock, and I think that says a lot about the state, and that's why, you know, we have someone like Conor McGregor, and we have this hype surrounding him, because it is the model that people like Dana White and Zuffa are taking advantage of. And the shills, the corporate media shills, the so-called MMA analysts, you know, people like, you know who they are. They're atrocious. They don't question this, and they are complicit in this, which is why you have this right now, where, you know, the biggest star in the world of mixed martial arts is not even close to the best fighter. Yeah, he's won a few fights here and there, but the enormous hype machine surrounding this guy gives him unwarranted attention and takes away from the whole sport. He's manufactured by the UFC, and it's what suffers is overall skill, overall technique, and respect for martial arts, respect for the opponent. All, as I said, all traces back to a culture gone awry here in America. And I don't want to say that this is relegated to the UFC. I've been very, very critical of Bellator. Bellator in some ways is worse. Look at what they're doing with Kimbo Slice. Look at how they've promoted Kimbo Slice's fights in the past. It's really, really disgusting. But this is where we find ourselves. And some people, the great one Eddie Goldman, have actually suggested that MMA is like a vice now. This is what this has become. It's become a vice. It's not even a sport anymore. And, you know, pretty soon when it gets labeled a vice, when it gets categorized as a vice, people are not going to be interested in it anymore. And people, it's going to fade away. And I don't know. That may or may not happen. I don't think you could really say MMA is a sport now. It's not structured as a sport. It has some elements of competition, some elements of sport, but, you know, it's basically one corporation, one private company. That's what it is. One private company who has pledged allegiance, who actually supports the culture that I referenced, the aforementioned culture, and is you know, who knows what's going to happen with the UFC? Who knows? You know, we can go back several years ago where, you know, I've said on Eddie's show before, Eddie's might have even said it on this show, that one death or one incident away from this sport being just obliterated, and coming to the point where, you know, Fox Sports and other major corporate outfits are not even going to be affiliated with the so-called sport anymore because of the behavior, you know, because of what we've seen. The UFC has made, I think, tepid responses and tepid responses on how to deal with behavior. They've tried to self-regulate with the drug testing. They've tried to self-regulate with some of the behavior, although it doesn't really matter. I mean, but it doesn't really change what's happening. It doesn't change the culture, and it doesn't change the product that people are receiving out there. It really doesn't. All right, so big thanks to Elvis Sinisek. Again, we really appreciate him coming on the program. I'm trying to think of what else we have to talk about here. A lot of people want to try to get me to have Dan Quinn on the show, and I've reached out to Dan. I don't know what's going on with Dan. You know, I the last few times I've interacted with Dan, you know, he's asked me if I'm working with the government. He's asking me, like, all these just questions, and I'm like, I don't know what to do. You know, I'll have Dan on, but I don't know if he's going to be able to be on. You know what I mean? But so we've got that going on tomorrow. I have a really, really good show. Actually, Eddie Goldman is going to be on the show with a man named Mimi Slotchik. I hope I'm pronouncing his last name right. I'm probably butchering it. But he is the socialist candidate for president in 2016. And this is going to be on with Carson's Corner, with the election boycott advocate. And Carson's Corner with the election boycott advocates is actually on Blog Talk Radio, where you're listening to us right now, from 9 to 11 each Friday night. And so Mimi Slotchik, he's a fairly young political activist. He's running for president in the Socialist Party USA. Should be some out-of-the-box discussion here with Eddie Goldman and Christopher Allen Driscoll, former media director for Ralph Nader. And, of course, yours truly, Bob Carson. That'll be on tomorrow at 9 p.m. Eastern time. Hope you'll tune in for that. And that's really it. That's all I have for today's show. You know, we wanted to give you Elvis. I hope that that interview turned out. I hope that I'm not coming out in and out. I have a very, very poor internet connection where I'm staying right now. So, excuse me. I just want to give you guys my Facebook information and my Twitter account, and then that'll be it. You can contact me on Facebook.com/BobCarsonMMA and Twitter.com/BobCarsonMMA. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. Until next time, show some respect.